My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, our monthly Q&A topic and listener response episode.
Yeah, capped off with announcing what we're going to be covering in December.
The cruelest month.
That's right. Take that, T.S. People. Tough shit, yeah. T.S.
Tough shit, Elliot. A joke that we all made in high school and drew pictures of him going around just doing poetry slams.
Yeah.
Which means something different when it's Tough Shit Elliot. We're going to get into it.
Here. We are, because we've got tons of ground to cover here. Starting with the questions, Q&A portion, we've got Bryn. Friend of the show, Bryn.
Bonfireside Chat alum, mm-hmm. And
Stay Inside
of Stay Inside. Post-hardcore band Stay Inside from Brooklyn.
They ask, I've recently been thinking about how mechanics are the real pros of video games, and more than story or aesthetic, they are the actual conduit of transmitting emotion and substance to the player. So my question is, can you think of a mechanic that changed the way you think about things in your real life? For example, the way the stamina bar works in Dark Souls kind of changed the way I think about managing my actual time and energy in my work and hobbies, and learning the resource management in Flesh and Blood, the card game, has actually really helped me manage my own finances. No fooling. Have y'all had any experiences with mechanics like this?
I sympathize to this question, like this question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing that pops to mind, I'm sure there are other ones mm-hmm. that are more than this, but me and Liv have incorporated, this is from D&D, incorporated mm-hmm. short rest.
Oh, yeah.
Into everything we do. So like we go out and go to cons or go and do a day thing. Mm-hmm. And that is just our code for like, we need to stop being stimulated mm-hmm. For a minute and like sit down and look at our phones for 5 minutes and be off our feet, mm-hmm. which is a D&D mechanic. It's not exactly the same, but like that's, you know, that is useful. Short rest is useful as a terminology mm-hmm. For that. And yeah. it provides the same benefits that it does in the game. Like we don't get all of our per day browses and walks back, but we get some of them back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a very good technology. It is hard for me to say this stuff without sounding like a beep boop computer man. But this is something that I know both of us do. Man, ever since I played The Sims, it is very hard not to think about my general well-being meters? In meters. Yeah,
I think about everything in meters.
Like, oh yeah,
now yeah. I even that again, just stuff with my wife. In the morning when we're like texting back and forth, and I have to like go, I'm like I have to go get my meters up. Mm-hmm. Before work, like it's literally how I think of myself as a little sim.
Yeah,
you know, it hasn't extended to moodlets yet, but that could also work.
Like, hey, you know
I've got a good moodlet, like something good happened. I have a little moodlet for a little bit.
Yeah, that has weirdly factored in, which is like literally it is just a vehicle for self-awareness, you know.
Yeah.
Or like a positive moodlet is like, oh yeah, no, I just like that's cool. I need to recognize that that's a cool thing and let myself feel good about it. Yeah. Sims meters
give me a +1 to to mood checks for the next hour.
Right.
Yeah, it's all that stuff is very useful. Mm-hmm. You know, it is just self-awareness. They're all things that are normal. They're just different ways to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Vitor, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, asks, how much do you guys role play in games considering the balance between this is what my character would do against I just want more content? In many cases, when talking about Souls games you mention how you say yes to everything just to see more content. When there's when the role play is more important to you than just seeing something you like, when is the role play more mm-hmm. important to you? Still talking about Souls likes, I don't know if this was answered before, but did you guys already play Lies of P? Did you like the game? Are you interested in playing? Thanks.
Yeah. To answer the last one, I checked it out because it was on Games Pass. I was not necessarily that inspired by it from like a level and level and encounter design kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the lack of iframes and dodges is a real bummer.
Yeah, I love iframes and dodges.
Yeah.
Enough people have told me it's interesting that I might play it at some point. Same mm-hmm. thing with Lord of the Fallen.
Yeah.
I'm not chomping at the bit for good combat, but not the same level design and tone.
Mm-hmm.
Enough people have said Liza P eventually gets interesting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, but I haven't played it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of role playing in a Souls game, I want to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, but I do in our RPG or imsim kind of thing, something like a Western game with like Western RPG that has choices matter and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I have very fully embraced this is what happened and it's just my story.
Yeah.
You know, a good example of that is Baldur's Gate 3. Sometimes, you know, you'll get a dialogue check, and if you fail it, there's a fight with somebody who would ordinarily be able to talk to and get more content. I have very much embraced, oh, that's just what happened to my guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a form of role playing and eliding content. Mm-hmm. And the best games will allow for that. Like, so something like that, like Disco Elysium, you know, something like that. If you just role play it and do what your instinct tells you, the mark of a truly great game, I think, is that it accommodates for that and gives you something interesting and great when you do it. It mm-hmm. doesn't just say like, this is a bad option, you know, or tell you to do it again. Mm-hmm. That is something wonderful games can do.
Yeah.
So if the game allows for it, I love to do it. The truth of the matter is most games don't.
Mm-hmm.
So in those games, I become a little content muncher.
Yeah. It's hard for me. It's not hard for me. I could have, I wanted to, but I find it most interesting to role play just as myself, bringing like, hey, like here's broadly my values to this and see how the simulation or how the writing or the scenario kind of accounts for that. And that's where you end up with like cool stuff, you know, like Witcher 3, right? Where like, okay, I am acting as a human would in this. There is no good way for this to shake out, but like, what are they saying about the reason that goes into this decision? Is generally my approach to it.
A game kind of has to have a no good solution to make that interesting.
Yes,
because if you're just playing as yourself, you're just gonna be Johnny Come Goodly.
Yes,
you know, like of course you're going to
neutral good for me, please.
like that's most people playing games. You know, so I like it when they force you to make those uncomfortable decisions.
Yes,
again, one of my favorite things games can do.
Moving on to Naveen. Naveen asks, you guys obviously do a lot of lore research and read the various in-game ephemera when covering something for Watch Out for Fireballs or Bonfireside Chat. But how much do you do that when playing a game on your own personal time? Are you always reading the notes / journals / item descriptions in games? Or is that only something you do when in coverage mode?
I mostly do this. I definitely notes. You know, I'm not going to like play a Resident Evil without reading the logs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then research wise, like, you know, one of my favorite game moments is you beat the game and then you get to go look up all the stuff you missed.
Mm-hmm.
I find the wiki dive after credits really satisfying.
Yes.
So, yeah, I do that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do it. I tend to do it as long as the game shows me that it is worth pursuing that.
Yes.
If it says codex updated and I go in and it is some really boring shit or a weird poem someone wrote, then I'm gonna maybe back off of it just a little bit. You know, so as long as it demonstrates that it's worth, you know, worth doing it. But yeah, generally I at least start by trying to do that.
I cannot stress how little I care about the Chantry in Thetis.
Yes.
And every time you find a little XP10 node that happens to have some Chantry rules and regulations on it mm-hmm. in Dragon Age, I'm like, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to skip that shit.
Yep.
So I guess it depends a little bit. John says, oh, this is better for here than as an amnesia question. I know your job is evaluating how wireframe and presentation interact, but do you have a distinct, wait a minute, moment where a revelation about a game killed the experience? For me, when playing Amnesia the Dark Descent, I suddenly realized that the game is designed to be winnable. Because your only resource is hiding, there must be a convenient closet everywhere. With that thought, the spell was broken and the horror melted away into tedium.
Hmm.
You know, the illusion is real. Like, we talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and like the art of game design in many ways is hiding the illusion or making the illusion feel right? You know, and that's just a thing that is going to, for me at least, is going to vary a lot from game to game and genre to genre. Like certain genres will, you know, I'll feel the fact that I'm, you know, dynasty warrioring through a thousand just anonymous guys, and sometimes they can sell it.
Yeah.
You know, I never feel that way in like Link to the Past when I'm killing three soldiers per screen and decimating this world that has maybe 70 people who live in it. You know,
maybe.
Yeah. So I never feel it in that kind of thing. So there are moments like that that get me, but they tend to be like kind of genre dependent things that are just end up being, you know, part of that. Like I can always see the illusion in certain things, like going between two towns in a console RPG never feels like a grand quest.
Yeah.
Where I'm just fighting, you know, monsters that feel meaningful. It always just feels like I'm filling time and gaining levels between plot points.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like, if you spend a lot of your life, like reading about haunted houses and learning about how haunted houses work and going to haunted houses and seeing new stuff, eventually it becomes less about like, oh, this haunted house is scary to me, and it's like, oh, this is neat, this is new, this is something I haven't seen before, this is something they did. Yeah. And so like the illusion, it is real and it is important. It's just hard for me to think of a time where I felt it so strongly and then had it dispelled by a certain thing. Every game is designed to be winnable, and you know, not every, there's probably some impossible stuff on itch or what have you, but like mostly, you know, a well-designed game is designed to give you a way to beat it. Otherwise it's just a weird little trap that you bought.
Yeah. Just a little like a horrible little, I 100%. I would do a haunted house recently, and like it was that kind of thing where it was like, I got, you know, I'm scared by jump scares, I'm not immune to that kind of thing. Yeah. But the main thing I was there was to, you know, the main thing I got from it was admiring craft I hadn't seen before.
Another
example of this though that I do that's a good wool between the eyes thing is me realizing how alarms and cooldowns worked in Metal Gear games. Once I realized enemies spawn unlimited, like you can never get rid of them all. They just have a con car full of them, and you just hide in the timeout box for a while. Once I realized that, it just became, instead of this narrative thing where I'm like hiding and it's kind of cool, it just became this thing of like, you don't get to play for a little bit, and that's your that's your punishment. And that felt awful, and then I stopped liking how that did stealth. You know, the illusion was gone.
Will writes, in his Forza Horizon review, Noah Caldwell-Gervais mentioned how playing the game's mixed on-road and off-road courses unexpectedly tapped into deep memories he had playing with toy cars as a child in his backyard. Are there any games you've played that connected you to early childhood experiences? For me, routing my rail network for the first time in Factorio unexpectedly triggered similar emotions to endless hours spent playing with wooden train sets, and Rocket League activates the same part of my brain that enjoyed flipping my RC car off of the furniture.
Probably. You know, I don't know. The comparison I always make for RTS games or tactical RPGs is moving your little guys around.
Yeah,
which is what you do when you're playing with action figures, which is what I did a lot as a kid.
Same for me with Army Men, even. Because I was a weird kid that grew up in, you know, the 1930s.
Lincoln Logs.
No, I had Lincoln Logs too. I made Lincoln Log forts for my army men.
Little House on the Prairie. kind of scenario.
My 1930s.
Cole of Green Gables.
my 1930s penny toys ass childhood.
The Grapes of Wrath esque.
My oranges, no.
I was never a car kid, but I do that. So I conceive of that kind of thing, and it reminds me of it.
Yeah.
For sure. I can see that.
I don't know. Any like big space, like playing MMOs for me, or anything that reminds me of old days playing like EverQuest and kind of stuff, just reminds me of being a little kid and feeling lost, you know, going out in the woods or whatever. That's a, you know, an anxious feeling, but also, you know, enjoyable, nostalgic, feeling that the world's big. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great feeling. For sure. Jordan or Maya asks, my fiance for the longest time was an avid pro player of Ark Survival Evolved. And she was wondering, what do you think of the devs of Ark deleting the devs of Ark deleting the entire original game and re-releasing the base game and previous expansions over the next year as remastered content so that they could have enough time to finish Ark 2 after missing their deadline by 2+ years. I don't know anything about this, but she seems fired up. And then there's a dinosaur, a hypnotized emoji, mm-hmm. and then maybe a black hole or like a Ouroboros kind of thing.
I don't see a third one. I just see the first two.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, there's a third one there.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I dying?
Are you on your Mac?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there's your problem.
Oh, okay.
You are dying of Macitis. That seems shitty to me. I don't know though. It sounds like didn't they do that with Overwatch? For a little while they were going to cancel Overwatch 1 because Overwatch 2 came out, and then they got in trouble.
I think they did just like rip Overwatch 1 out of existence to replace it with Overwatch 2. I don't think that's something they moved back on. That sounds terrible, and it's not the only like shitty dev thing that I've heard of the Ark Survival team doing. Just in terms of even just treating the player base. I probably would be pretty fired up too, having a thing that I already own be ripped away from me and then sold back to me. Who are you, Nintendo?
Yeah, exactly. I like legacy versions of things too.
Yes.
You know, I understand that it's financially unfeasible, but like there's something to the fact that, I'm not an MMO guy, but like WoW re-releasing the classic servers.
Yeah.
In a perfect world where money was not a motivator, just having it be like, we created this update, but you can stay on the old one if you want.
Yeah.
You know, like we're going to maintain that stuff so you can choose. Obviously, they wouldn't do that, but that would be, just from a purely, I live in a simulation where everything, I get everything I want.
Yeah.
Perspective. Yeah. That's what I would want.
Same.
That's cool.
And that's why like fan shards on EverQuest are so interesting to me. It's just make it yourself, dummy.
Or you go online for different bits of software. You can find old versions of things.
Yeah.
You know, like if I wanted to use the version of Winamp that I used as a kid, I could.
And it would whip the llama's ass.
It would absolutely whip the llama's ass. Like there's so much value to the devil, it's the thing that makes me fucking furious about software stuff in general, software and hardware, like incremental improvements that barely do anything. But I have to get used to a whole new section, the file part is over here now. Just like absolutely minor, like piss and dick, nickel and dime, piss and dick isn't a phrase. That's not where I got my first real six string. the piss and dick. But people pissing and dicking me with little tiny changes that I don't know. Every version of Excel is a little bit more annoying than the last one.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's fine if it's the only one I knew. But I don't know. I don't want to trade the new features for the new interface usually.
Yeah.
I'm old.
And usually, as of recently, it's always been about weird, like money making stuff too, trying to front an experience that you're ultimately going to have to pay more for. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all bleak.
Yeah. Nikolai writes, "Hi guys, looking very much forward to both Baldur's Gate 3 and Real Lich Hours. I really like CRPGs. But have a really hard time getting through passages with torture / body horror / characters in extreme pain. Thus, I really struggled with, for example, the torture cellars of Fort Joy and the Queen Justinia cellars in Divinity Original Sin 2 and the Heart of the Bloom / the Eternal Gate content in Tides of Numenera, and almost having to quit the games despite loving the rest. Have you encountered such content in Baldur's Gate 3? And are such segments more generally a thing within Western fantasy / D&D inspired games?" I would say the core peril setup in Baldur's Gate 3 is very, very body horror-y.
The very first thing that happens to you is extremely body horror, and then it chills a little bit. But you do, it starts on a big bang with that. I this is probably more of a, it's not every, Western role-playing game, but it is probably more of a Western fantasy thing. And you see this even in games not developed in the West, right? Like the Western fantasy of Dark Souls has, you go into Godric the Grafted's kitchen and it's a larder of limbs, you know, that are hanging from the ceiling. Like, you get a lot of that kind of shit.
You have the egg burdened. You have whatever's going on with the king and the Latria, right?
Yeah, it is a Western flavor thing to do that, as opposed to having kind of a, you know, like a waif who you have to believe is scary because the characters say they are, you know, Kuja. Yeah. Like, I don't find Kuja scary, but characters do, so I'm supposed to think he's scary. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not that is definitely a Western thing. So it's not universal. You know, there are games that don't really do it. Like, I know Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 don't have a whole lot of body horror in them.
And also, it's not very, I mean, the visuals in those are not going to be as viscerally unpleasant as, you know, what you're going to get in Baldur's Gate 3, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but it does tend towards darker fantasy as opposed to lighter fantasy, for sure.
And I'll cop to this, at least the things I, you know, get super, am super a sicko for, you know, and recommend, and that steers what we cover, like, you know, anything that gets that horror tinge into it, you know, Monster in My Podcast, anytime we talk about a fucked up little dude who will fuck up other dudes to make them fucked up little dudes.
We love that shit. Like, we're Hellraisers. Yes. Like, we got Cenobite DNA in us. Yeah. So, like, when that kind of shit happens, I'm pretty into it. Like, in Divinity Original Sin 2, you go down to the Flenser's basement and I'm rubbing my hands.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't activate my mirror neurons, you know, in that scenario. I'm just like, oh, I'm watching a Hellraiser movie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Cenobite land. Yes. Cenobite land is cool.
I would like to buy a condo here.
what I would say, yeah, exactly. Like, I will do the timeshare of Cenobite zone. I would say, so it's not universal to them. It probably trends more towards that, but you can look up you know, content warnings or descriptions of things that happen and see what that happens. And if you go further back, there are tons of, like, absolute masterpiece games that go further back that have a level of visual fidelity that probably won't squeak you out.
Yeah.
You know, like Fallout 1 and 2, you know, masterpieces of the genre without having the visual fidelity to be that gross. Mm-hmm. There's some, like, very quaint slime piles and stuff, but
yeah.
Nothing I think that will hurt, would be my guess. Baldur's Gate 3 does start on a big bang.
Yes.
Yeah. Randall asks, for Cole, how are you liking Armored Core 6? It's my first Armored Core game, and I'm really into it. Cole?
I have not played much more of it than I talked about on the level. It's fine. Not terribly motivated to go a whole lot further right now, primarily because of time reasons, more than anything. But, like, feels good in the hands. You know, it's... Some of the dialogue is very funny to me, but I don't know if that is what they're aiming for or not. It is genuinely hard to tell. I'm not, like, throwing shade there. But yeah, that's about where I'm at.
Yeah. Question for Gary. Have you ever watched Mandalore reviews on YouTube? I have. I recently found this person. They review stuff I like. Mm-hmm. This Grimbeard is a relatively new follow for me, and he's fantastic. Does weird turn of, you know, 2000s, like, scudgy PC shit. So, like, a lot of CRPGs, but then also stuff like, you know, Vampire Redemption.
You
know, stuff like that, like weird stuff like that. And then also Lovecraft stuff, like very even-handed reviews of, you know, Sinking City, things like that, like long form analysis of that, which I like. Really good. So a fan, I would say.
Cool. Yeah. Mandalore Gaming.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Moving on to the life questions here. Sebastian writes, hey guys, I greatly enjoy your works and want to thank you for the service you provide. Now to my question, how does one change their political beliefs? I consider myself.
Thank you. And here's the biggest question in the world.
Yeah. I consider myself rather conservative, but I recognize many of the issues the left denounces. My problem, if you want to call it that, is that my head doesn't allow me to just choose what I think about a given subject. An alternative question might be how to get rid of unconscious biases. Have a great day.
Yeah, there are whole books written about this by people smarter than we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing when my general move to the left that has happened in my adulthood has all been rooted in empathy.
Yeah.
Has all been rooted in what I see, you know, once I internalized, and it makes me sound like I was a monster before because I didn't have this internalized, but hopefully, you know what I mean? That any people are just people, you know, all people. I'm not the main character. my race or country is obviously not the main race or country. Like, all of this stuff is valid. I don't need to play on any teams. Then it became easy to say, no, I don't, you know, this is for a greater good. You know, I want these, you know, I want these people who have rough lives to have better lives. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say, you know, fuck you, you should have just done better. Yeah. Because what I'm being asked to choose in a lot of these situations is somebody who already wants for nothing, to have more, versus somebody who, like, I guess getting rid of the question of deserve.
Yeah.
You know, is a big part of, like, that arc for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the idea of, like, have you earned a good life?
Yeah.
You know, and fuck you if you didn't. I think that's the it feels like the core difference to me politically. Like, in you know, in being charitable with that, is like whether you think you have to earn the right to a reasonable life. And we have enough stuff to where everyone should just be able to have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we bounty provides, but we just don't do it.
Right.
That tragedy is what made it easy for me. So I was thinking of people first.
Yeah.
Of stuff. That is kind of what helped me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. You know, all of it just kind of comes from listening to other people and paying attention, you know, and a thing about, you know, if you are, you know, consciously, like, wanting to make a move, or, you know, you recognize these issues, but you are dealing with these inherent biases, like, bias doesn't go away, really, like, it can, and you can work against it, but, like, knee-jerk reactions probably are going to remain a knee-jerk, right? You can get better, but, like, you know, just because you feel yourself having that does not mean that you have to, like, roll with it and make it into, you know, make it into a way that you react to something. Like, and I think that, like, being a little bit, like, kinder to yourself and saying, like, hey, like, this is something that I'm actually, like, working on, being like, no, that thing that I thought, yeah, that's whatever, that's not who I want to be, and then just, like, rolling with it. Don't punish yourself for, you know, for feeling that, because everybody's, you know, on a spectrum, and if you are working towards getting better, then you can't just say, like,
you're doing what you can do.
100%
of effort is more important than 100% of result.
Yes.
In this scenario,
you know, and people generally can recognize when you're trying, you know, so that is the, you know, that is something else there. But yeah, just, you know, understanding, man, I think I have relatives like this, people who are very close to me, who, you know, I uncharitably sometimes think when I hear them talking, their dream job would be standing at the checkout at the supermarket and looking in people's carts to decide whether or not they should get that based on how much money they have, right? Just like, I'm gonna be your shopping cart sensor. Like, oh, you're paying for that with an EBT card? Well, sorry, no, you can't get this. Like, our government does plenty of that, but there are other people who's like, you're buying candy bars for your kids.
Yeah, really bothers them. Like, that gene of just being really, really pissed that somebody somewhere might get something you don't think they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is the thing that I think is good to, when people say fix your heart or die, that's what they mean.
Yes.
You know, like, that's not good heart.
No. And just, do you want to be that person? Probably not, based on the way that I describe them, shaking their fist at somebody for buying a candy bar for their kid. But they exist. You can go deeper with this, you know, trying to understand things in terms of power and power structure and incentive, you know, seeing, like, the ways that having unemployment is used as a cudgel to discipline labor and things like that. Like, all of that can come in time. But I think just at the very least, understanding when you're having a knee-jerk reaction and then tempering how that is expressed goes a better way toward at least understanding the shape of the conceptions that you're coming in with.
Yeah. There's a really good, I wish I had it handy, which I don't, but there's a really good essay I read early on. So this is like 10 years old at least. And it was about smoking. Yep. And I don't like smoking. Killed my mom. Mm-hmm. I think it's disgusting. But it was about somebody who, you know, was very impoverished, like working multiple jobs, smoking. And it made me have empathy for them doing that as this moment of, like, you know, the drug does something. You know, they're literally self-medicating for this situation. And it's very easy just to be like, yeah, just don't do that. It's expensive and it's bad for you.
Yeah.
You know, but you have no idea. Man, read the This Is Water Dave Foster Waller thing.
That's the other thing I was going to bring into it. Yeah. You've got no idea what their struggle is. Yeah.
You have no idea what anybody else's struggle is. And the same way they don't know about yours. Mm-hmm. And just assuming and projecting like your values and what you would do is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really powerfully condescending thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And patronizing thing to do. And everyone does it to a degree. I'm not calling you out for that. Like, I would echo what Cole says in terms of like being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
But it's something that I strive to do less. And I think that it is a virtuous thing personally to strive to do that less.
Yeah. And if you're looking for a shortcut, I know I say this as a joke an awful lot, but I mean it deep down into my heart. Sometimes it's none of my business. You can just say to yourself, none of my business. And then you can go on. It is such a powerful phrase just to come in and intercept and immediately set yourself right.
It goes further than you think too. Like it starts off with something very easy. Like obviously if a poor kid eats a candy bar,
mm-hmm.
like my feeling right now is Yahtzee. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Go kid.
Yeah.
But you know, that's a very easy thing to say. That's none of your business.
Yeah.
That can be expanded a little bit further.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like.
How so a person wants to express their gender, none of my business.
Yeah, none of your business. Why does it affect you? You're fine. You know, like all of that stuff. Also, there's bits of this too where you can read what actually happens. Sex offenders, in a general sense, by and large, not people who are gender nonconforming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not drag queens.
Yep.
Who are going through and reading at libraries. Those aren't the people doing it.
Yeah, it's people the kid knows. Yeah, it's people,
it's uncles.
Yeah,
it's uncles and Cub Scout leaders and priests.
Church.
It's not that. Like the actual data's there.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, when people say reality has a liberal bias, that's what they mean.
Yeah.
And you can read that stuff and you can find source after source after source. Like if you feel like you find a source and it doesn't confirm your knee jerk, and mm-hmm. you know that bothers you, find another source. And at some point, the preponderance of sources telling you, like, hey, man. It's not drag queens and libraries doing this. Trans people are not trying to sneak into bathrooms for anything nefarious. They just need to piss.
Yeah.
Like we do, you know, that will also, it all goes together. That will also lend to the basic humanity, right?
Yes.
Like I think about bathroom bill shit. And I'm just like, hey man, I have to piss.
Mm-hmm.
How could I begrudge another human having to piss?
Yeah.
It's the most basic thing that ever happens. It's the most basic thing since shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's since sliced shit.
Well, it literally, you do it before you can see.
Like, yep. Yeah. You do it. It's the first thing I do in every morning. It's the last mm-hmm. thing I do before I go to sleep. I need a place to do it. So do they. So do my trans brothers, sisters, and siblings.
Yep.
So let them do it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no danger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wish you luck, you know, trying to get that sorted out.
Agreed. AJ says, hi friends, I'm Apricot, she her, the rare and elusive duck feed fan that arrived via the AV club to Will Streams to Guppy Pipeline, who now listens to most of the shows. That's incredible. This is a Gary question, no worries if it's too personal. I'm in my early 30s. I don't have a degree. I went to university right after high school, but it went increasingly poorly for 4 years due to mental health things, etc. So if I was to go back now, I'd basically have to start from scratch, which I sometimes contemplate doing. My question is, when and why did you decide to go back to college? What did you study? Was it a good experience? Thank you for your many hours of interesting and or funny podcasting. Yeah, thank you. I went back to college because I was working a job that I could stay in basically forever and was making, you know, enough money to live very modestly. But hated and wanted to have a backup degree in case anything that I wanted to do didn't work out. So I could have a little bit more flexibility in that.
Yeah.
The idea of getting something I wanted to do was like basically felt off the table. And then I went back to school and I took out a lot of loans, a lot of debt. So it allowed me to work less at the job I hated, which was a huge balm at the time. In the grand scheme of things, debt's not great. You know, mm-hmm. it probably wasn't smart if I was like playing the game of life, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't controlling myself like a chess piece. I was living it feet on the ground. So I needed relief. you know, and I took it. It was not a super good experience. Like it was painless, but it was educationally pretty questionable, in terms of what I actually learned, being enlightened from it, mm-hmm. was not great. I got my degree in arts and letters, at Portland State University is what my degree is, which is basically an English degree. But you don't have to learn a foreign language. Because I would have had to, it would have added like 3 more years to my degree because you have in Illinois, you don't have to learn a foreign language. In Oregon, you do in high school. So okay. Those credits transfer. If you are in Oregon, you go to PSU, you can do the foreign language requirement for English degree in 2 years. But if you're from out of state, if you don't have high school foreign language, it takes 4 years.
Yeah. So that is wild. Yeah.
Yep. So it's essentially an English degree with the serial number file off. Mm-hmm. I don't regret it because I don't regret anything that got me where I am now. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm very happy where I am now, and who knows, like if a little change would change that. But it wasn't a great experience education wise.
Yeah.
I would say depending on what your motives are, if you are doing it because if there's something you want to go into, you know, I'm a big proponent of running to something as opposed to away from something. Like. Mm-hmm. Most of my life, I made a lot of choices based on trying to avoid a thing I didn't want, as opposed to moving towards something I did want. And that, I think, was a mistake. I think that's not a good framing. If there's something you want to do that requires a degree 100%, it's not mm-hmm. too late. It will probably be easier for you than it was when just out of high school. The social part of it, it was not hard. I didn't socialize with people, but also you're pretty anonymous.
No.
Big classes. I felt like I was going to be very odd, like stick out like as the old guy in the room, but I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I was fine. I would say if that's the case, if you're going towards something, definitely do it. If you're just trying to do it to do it, that has lost some cachet. Mm-hmm. It is much less of a guarantee of a good job, and job placement in colleges has gotten really shitty and has generated a lot of discourse. Like a lot of colleges are in a lot of trouble for writing checks they can't cash in terms of like job placement and setting you up for jobs. So I would have like a clear plan going into it. Like have something you want to do that requires the degree would be my advice.
Yeah, I've got nothing on that because I had a very traditional college experience. So no.
That would be what I would say. And good luck.
Yeah. Whatever you decide to do.
Yeah, early 30s is not too late. You're very young.
Yes. Monster Nuggets writes, hey gang, Monster here. Myself and the soon to be Mrs. Nuggets are getting married in 2 weeks. Congratulations.
Nuggets.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Yeah. This will be both of our second tries at marriage. My question for Gary, as a previously model divorcee and newly minted husband, do you have any tips you'd like to share to make the second marriage last? Thanks in advance, gents, and keep up the great work.
Yeah. Well, I'm only going on 10 months now. So, you know, but there's basically no way this marriage doesn't last. I just, you know, you meet the right wife. You know, my transition to full-time wife guy has been shocking and abrupt, but intense, like the movie The Fly. I am like the wife fly. I went through a teleporter accident with a wife and now I've become the wife guy. You will do better probably than your first one. I learned a lot from my first marriage. You know, all the shitty failures during my slut phase and during my, you know, all of my different relationships previous to this have helped solidify what I want and how I can be better as a partner. So follow those instincts and just be wary of old patterns if that happens. And be real open. Don't expect you or Mrs. Nuggets to not have anything left over. You know, like something that will happen a lot between me and Liv is like, we'll be like, hey, I know this sounds weird, but my ex used to do this shitty thing. Mm-hmm. Can I ask for reassurance about this? Like, this isn't that, right?
Yeah.
And then we just take the time to reassure because that's not too much to ask. You know, and just like, hey, you know, this is my baggage, but I'm just being open about it is a really powerful phrase.
There's a commonality between this question and the previous one about you taking another try at college too, which is the you never step in the same river twice-ness of it, you know? Like, you're probably set up pretty well comparatively in both of those instances because you've lived more and are more mature.
Yes.
You know? Like, both school and marriage are sometimes things that people can stumble into way too young because it's the thing you're supposed to do. Capital S, capital D, supposed to do. Coming at it, knowing more about yourself seems like it can only be beneficial.
Yeah. People get better. You get better.
Yeah.
You know, in general, like, I truly believe that is true.
Yeah.
Question for Cole here. Rob, our final life question. Rob says, Cole, we need more content about your outdoor adventures. Free idea. Tales from the Crick. A crick so good we had to make a show about it. I'd also accept a monster in my podcast season. Today we're talking about the common mud puppy. This is too big of an ask. Can you at least give the listeners a tight 90 seconds on your latest crick run? Crick has a dual meaning in our network.
It does.
And
yes.
Rob has being irresponsible with it in a way that I cannot countenance.
yeah, it does. Yeah. Rob is referring to the body of water here, not the cult leader slash sorghum farm owner. Yes.
Yeah. A creek, how they're called.
Yeah.
The word version of it.
Can't do a whole show on it because there are people who know more than me. Latest creek run. Got some new hiking boots that were waterproof. So I decided to take a hike at a new trail a few towns over and went off trail a little bit to get down by the creek. It was a kind of a portion of the Sandusky River I'd never been up along, and it was easy to get down there, but very hard to get back up. Mostly ended up climbing maybe like a 60-degree incline while holding from tree to tree because there was no other way to get back up. But it was fun. Yeah.
Mud skipping.
Yeah. I got real close to a couple of deer. You can do that if you just consciously walk quietly. You'll eventually run into some deer, which is cool. And a squirrel threw something at me. Squirrels get angry at you when you're on their territory.
Yeah, squirrels are very territorial.
Yeah. And that's my latest crick run. Don't know if that was 90 seconds, but.
And if you listen to that three times a week, like Monster in My Podcast, along with me going, huh? And yeah,
all of this stands to reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sure. That makes sense. Yeah. I like creeks, but I don't have any near my house.
No. I've got a preponderance of very good trails all within like an hour drive at me. Yeah.
Let's move on to media questions.
Let's see. James writes, hey there, fellas. So I'm a real piggy for all things Dune. I can't quite put my finger on it. There are stories and lore of the books themselves, but there's also all the stuff that has spawned from them. The cheesy music and performances on the audiobook, the artwork and smell of old paperbacks I've collected, the amazing board game. It all gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling, like a kind of happy nostalgia. Which books or fictional worlds do the same for you guys? And then there's a PS about, we did an Abject Suffering about a Dune game. They expected us to excoriate Dune, but instead we just made fun of the goofy stuff. So they were happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Always happy. That's what we're trying to do most of the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes we, you know, actually hurt feelings, but we're trying to make fun of the goofy stuff.
Yes.
I always want there to be an asterisk that like, I like equally dorky or more dorky shit.
Yeah.
Than this. So like if somebody wanted to go and goof on, like, I don't know, the Mark Gruenwald's Squadron Supreme miniseries from the 80s, like, do it, please. Yeah. You know, like that, I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
Fictional worlds that are warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Forgotten Realms, like, yeah. Thinking back to the Drizzt books and all of that, basically like any fantasy that I have that I read when I was in middle school and high school, so like Pern stuff too, you know. Those are probably my two.
Yeah, the big Forgotten Realms, old D&D Dragonlance books as well, then the Belgariad David Eddings, the guy who kept kids in cages in his basement, sadly. I have to ignore that for being but the you know, I really like those worlds, and that gives me that same feeling. I have some old paperbacks of them that I used to have that had the very nice like smell, and then lost them and ended up buying collected editions which do not smell the same.
Oh no,
sad. Drew on Arrival says, thoughts on Brandon Sanderson. My best friend loves his work. As for me, I'm struggling to finish the first Mistborn novel. No thoughts. I get him confused with a couple of other, like Jim Butcher, a couple of other like modern fantasy guys. King Killer Chronicles, which might be Sanderson, I don't know. I just get them confused, and I know that one of them has discourse around them and one of them doesn't, and I just haven't read them and I don't know.
Yeah.
If I were younger, I would have I would have read those because they were in modern fantasy that everyone liked.
I would have sought them out. Yeah. No thoughts. No thoughts on Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah. Yeah. No thoughts.
Final media question here. Eric writes, I know suggestions are poison, but I almost broke protocol to recommend something. And then Gary goes and sees Glorious. It was a real surprise of a movie. And both J.K. Simmons and the True Blood guy were great. Gary talked about this in the most recent Quackstack movie about an eldritch monster that is a glory hole.
Yes, it is behind a glory hole, but it does seem like it's just J.K. Simmons as a sentient glory hole.
Yes. They continue, since that was tailor-made to Unfilmable, I wanted to see if you'd ever heard of something else directly to your tastes. The movie Dave Makes a Maze. It's a House of Leaves alike with some Michel Gondry visuals and has James Urbaniak as an actor. While not perfect, it's a fun watch and may as well have For My Dearest Cole written on the scripts. curious if this is a known product, or as much of a surprise, to you, all as much of a surprise to you all as its existence was to me. I've seen Dave Makes a Maze. I wish that I liked it more. It is way too twee.
Okay. I have not seen it. I've only heard it. Heard about it. Mm-hmm. And heard generally good things, but never seen it.
Yeah. So. I like I said, I wished I liked it more. It is really inventive with its visuals and stuff, but it is just not really scary and a little bit too much like, you know, the joy of making things and friendship kind of deal.
Yeah, a little too power of friendship.
Good body horror in an unexpected way, but yeah.
No. Yeah, I'm curious about it, but I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. Moving on to show questions. Luke says, I really enjoyed a lot of the extracurricular episodes of Bonfireside Chat. You guys turned me on to Lovecraft and Junji Ito. Do you have any plans for similar episodes with the Elden Ring season? I know you're not big anime or kaiju guys, but Hideki Anno and Hayao Miyazaki's work was all over the game. Probably not. This question may have come in before the announcement.
Yeah.
We're not going to be killing time on Bonfireside Chat. Like, I'm not disparaging those episodes. Like, I liked doing those episodes too. It was a chance to branch out. Yeah. I think something that kind of happened with that is something that we do instinctually is we create shows that give us excuses to cover shit that we want to cover.
Yeah.
You know? So like horror, you know, now if we were wanted to cover Uzumaki, instead of putting it on the Bloodborne season where it is only kind of vaguely related, we just do it on Unfilmable.
Yes.
You know, and just call it like an audible for that because it's a book, it's not a movie, but it doesn't matter. We would just cover it there.
Yeah.
You know, so we have other avenues for stuff like that if we wanted to talk about it rather than just it being vaguely related to whatever FromSoft game we're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for you, Cole. That's how I feel about it.
No, that's about right. Yeah. You know, no plans just because the network has changed since we did those.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with either of the people mentioned. Well,
Miyazaki is just the Studio Ghibli guy. I don't know who Hideki Anno. Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard of Anno. I think Anno is the Eva guy. Evangelion guy. I guess that is the Studio Ghibli guy. Which we talked about some Studio Ghibli stuff. I'm good with Studio Ghibli. I like it just fine. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more Princess Mononoke's and less Ponyos. fewer just like child time frolics and more things that feel a little bit more grown up, I guess, is my opinion on him. Bo says, I recently re-listened to your Hitman 2 episode And you mentioned how hard it would be to move on from Hitman to Disco Elysium, a game which you both mentioned as being a likely all-time favorite, and which was covered shortly after other equally praised Duckfeed favorites like Dragonfall, XCOM, and Legend of Grimrock 2. 2020 was clearly a stellar year for games for the show, but do you think that it was the most packed? Which year in the run of WoF do you think contained the most all-timers?
Hibbo, you presume so much about what I remember about doing the show.
I don't remember what year things took place in. Yeah. That is a fucking killer year, though.
That is a fucking banger, imagine, is what it is.
Yeah, Hitman, Disco Elysium, Dragonfall, XCOM, and Legend of Grimrock 2.
Good
Jesus
Lord.
Fucking Christ. Like, that's like a lot of my top 25s popping up in there, and everything in there is in my top like 35 or 40. Good Lord. Yeah. Is that a good run of episodes?
Yeah, let's just go with that one.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
But even like, let's just redo that.
Let's just cycle through those games over and over again.
Yeah. 2020, Groundhog Day.
Yeah. I don't know how weird it would be to go from Hitman to Disco Elysium. I love both of those games for different reasons.
But they are very different, though. Like, we were talking about it being weird, and it is a huge gear shift, but they're both great, like, in different... God. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Andrew says, do you think Real Lich Hours will be a good listen as a sort of audio let's play for somebody who has not and does not plan to play Baldur's Gate 3 and has essentially no D&D knowledge beyond the most basic? Sorry if that's a stupid question, but it sounded from the description that it might be, and I was just wondering. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. It won't be exactly a let's play or anything, but I think you can vicariously appreciate, the show from that. It will serve as such. We're doing the characterization thing with our two different perspectives, so we're going to talk about, there'll be a little bit of light role playing.
Yeah,
not on the podcast. I'm not going to be like, hello, Cole, my name is Sir Elfington, I'm Picard, the Elven Ranger. Like, I'm not going to do that, but it is I think so.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to say for sure because it's a show we haven't made yet. We're trying a different structure, but I think, our general thing of like trying to relate what is cool about this or what works or what doesn't will serve that function for you pretty well. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Do you want to do lightning rounds?
Yeah, let's move on to lightning round. I was going to suggest the exact same thing.
Yeah. Lightning round, quick stuff. Robert writes, fellas, I recently started working with a guy named Gary, spelled G-A-R-R-I-E. I didn't even know such a name was possible. As a Gary and a Gary adjacent, how do you feel about this?
I didn't know it was possible either.
Yeah.
I assume that would be like a feminine spelling for it, but I don't know. I'd never seen that. Or a French spelling.
Like Gary.
Gary. I feel conflicted about it, but since Gary's are dying out, welcome aboard.
Ethan, we are making the tent bigger.
Bigger tent. Big tent conspiracy. Ethan says, hey guys, really looking forward to your upcoming Baldur's Gate 3 podcast, but I'm real impatient. To tide me over, tell me what would make for a better president, a lich or an ancient chromatic dragon? Bonus question, what creature would be the third party option?
I mean, a lich for sure.
Would be a better president.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's chromatic dragons are always evil.
They're always evil and they're also dumb.
the chromatic dragons are pretty dumb. I mean, some of them are super dumb. Yeah. Not always. Like, we don't want a bronze dragon president.
No.
But a lich at least is cunning. Even if they were kind of evil.
Yeah.
Like, they'd at least be very cunning.
Leadership skills. They think in the long term.
Third party would have to be something that doesn't make it a slam dunk, and I would imagine would draw votes from one of the other ones because that's how third parties work.
So
maybe like a mummy lord or a gem dragon, like a shitty psionic.
Let's get a doppelganger in there. He's everything to everybody.
Would be great. Like, exactly. Like, just like vote for yourself.
Yeah.
I'd vote for me. Yeah.
Everybody likes the movie. Everybody likes the movie Dave.
Yeah, exactly. vote for Dave.
Jack writes, gentlemen, looking forward to all things Baldur's Gate 3, and I miss the hell out of Monster in my podcast. Snap reaction. What's your favorite standard low level D&D creature?
Got a weird weakness for Zvarts. Just because they are the pre-goblin, pre-gobold, shitty humanoid you fight in Baldur's Gate 1. And they're called Zvarts. And it's just like, you know, a Zvart attacked. And I'm like, fuck the Zvart? And you don't learn anything about them. They're just little guys, you know, Zerglings that are on the map. That fuck with you.
I don't know how low level they are, but they're tiny little guys. But I'm going to say intellect devourers are just impossibly cute.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't you want to kick one like a football?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I would punt that bad boy. Yeah.
Lyle says, hey to both of you wonderful lads from Scotland. Keep up the good work. My question. Gary, as a long-term proponent of the Dark Gift, how do you both feel about going full Mind Flayer in Baldur's Gate 3 or a la Baldur's Gate 3?
Seems like it really sucks. Yeah, I'm going to say no on that one.
You're going to say no. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to say conflicted, having seen more of the game.
Okay.
All right, okay. You get to fly.
Greg writes, Cole, how do you feel about having a name that is somewhat uncommon, at least in the way that it's spelled? And Gary, how do you feel about having such a common name? And are there any characters with your name in fiction that you really like? Sadly, Greg isn't that common a name anymore, and the few Gregs I've seen in video games tend to be assholes.
My name is not common. It's only by Light of Cole that my name seems common. It's like how my voice seems incredibly squeaky and high-pitched.
Yes.
Next year's.
Right.
When in real life, it's a normal voice. Gary's are super rare. We're dying out. We're dying out.
Okay.
There are studies about it. Like the last Gary will be born. The last Gary is in captivity. The galaxy's at peace. So it's only your odd spelling
that
makes your name rarer, I think.
Used to be annoyed by it because I have to correct people, but now, like, in an age where like branding is a thing and I am in a public facing spot, it's really hard to mistake me for somebody else visually reading about me in text. So that's cool. It's fine. It was weird when I got laid off at that one job. They hired the one other Cole in existence.
In terms of great Gary's out there, like Gary's, I am a fan of. There's a lot of like fine actors, you know, like they're just fine.
Yeah,
you know, Gary Sinise is fine. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm like crazy about him.
I mean, we do get the teleporter accident that is Gary Cole, who is a fine actor.
Gary Cole is great. Yes, probably the closest I got, and there are not a whole lot of famous Coles.
No, that's fine.
Aaron says, I hate the new Patreon. By the time I figured out how to get to the comments, I forgot what I was going to ask. So just go ahead and ask each other questions and say it's from me. Patreon redesigned. It's got the worst logo of all time.
Yeah. do you want to be reminded of Zoop every time you log in to get your money?
Yeah, I love a Zoop. Yeah. The way that it does stuff on the back end was very overwhelming. I've gotten a little bit used to it. I still see previous comments about just pointlessly changing things constantly to change them. I much prefer just knowing where to click things.
It's hard to think of a question to ask Gary because we do our green room chat before recording.
Yeah, we talk.
So, we talk.
How long, what are you doing this weekend?
Recovering from my sinus infection that I believe is the result of an infected tooth that I had to get re-root canaled. I'm making no plans because I have to just assume that I'm going to be, you know, loopy on painkillers. So
yeah, laid up.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm this weekend just taking it off. It's the only weekend where you don't have anything going on. But tomorrow and the next day we're going to Seattle to go see Auntie Donna with producer Gwen.
Nice.
Gonna go have dinner and hang out with Gwen. It's gonna be fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah, got a train ride ahead of me. Love that. Oh, taking the Amtrak up to Seattle.
Yeah. Steven writes, I've been re-listening to most of the Resident Evil Watch Out for Fireballs, as well as catching up on Abject Sufferings, and have been wondering, after the antagonist mutates and turns into a giant tentacle monster and successfully kills the protagonist, then what? Can they just turn back into their human form, or are they just stuck at this as this horrible monster that's too big to be involved with Wesker, the connections, or even Chris Redfield's plot to claim every man as his own?
His collection of Beat Boys. We let King Gorilla have his Tarzans. We let Chris Redfield have his little Chris Redfields.
Yeah, true.
I don't know what happens if like Birkin won. I guess he would just walk around to that place where you fought him and kind of growl and
Doesn't sound like there's an awful lot of him left.
Eat rats. It'd be a pretty bleak existence. It'd be like what happens when a vampire, you know, like when Lestat was like eating rats in that tower and stuff, like a monster who just kind of loses its prey and goes dormant.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think that, Birkin definitely didn't have a plan for it. I don't know about like the extreme makeover guy from Resident Evil 5. Like, it seems like after
he was waterbound.
Like, yeah, true.
Yeah, he would just become a lake. He'd become a Loch Ness.
Yeah.
Ogopogo.
It seems like eventually in 4, 5, and 6, you end up getting characters who can transform back and forth. So that's the thing, but like, you know, Birkin's fucked.
It depends too. Like you look at somebody like Salazar,
no,
who transforms after getting shot. So yes, he can't transform back and forth. He would just be that thing in that room stuck to that wall.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful thing Leon could have done is left. and like, it's just like, well, fuck. Uh-huh. I can't get through any doors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Matt says, I don't have a question to ask, but it's been a while since I've had my name read on the network. Please just list a few video games so that I can nod my head in affirmation at the ones I recognize.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see.
Freedom Force versus the Third Reich.
Yeah. Smart Ball.
Smart Ball Balls.
Mm.
Uniracers.
Kid Chameleon. That's pretty good. Yeah.
There you go. Nod away.
The Accident Channel says, hey fellas, I've been a long time listener and fan of the network in general, and this is my first time writing a question in. All I gotta ask is, when should we expect the announcement for a Guided by Voices Era by Era show? I know you'll be busy with Real Lich Hours coming up, but I'm sure you'll find the time after all of that. Obviously kidding, love the show, guys.
Probably not anytime soon. I'd love to do it. I'm Guided by Voices, depending on what day you ask me, is my favorite band, mm-hmm. but there are probably 20 albums I've never heard by them, you know, which is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be very fun discovering that.
And
even the new ones that are like not as good are still good records. They're just not Alien Lands good. So it's, I listen to them.
Yeah. I would wish you Godspeed on it.
Thank you. Quick on these last three. I'm realizing I'm running up on time here.
Yeah.
Tom says, since it's Halloween, who is your favorite vampire?
Jefferson Twilight.
Oh, that's a great answer, but not a vampire.
I thought he was a half vampire. He's got the blood.
He's a vampire hunter. He's got the blood eye, but his mom was killed by.
His mom was killed by a vampire. Okay.
Blackula.
Damn.
Yeah.
Blackula. Yes.
Yeah. He does have the blood eye, but he takes their fangs. He doesn't have the fangs.
Yeah, I thought it was I thought it was like a blade situation. Oh well,
Blade.
Let's say blade.
Blade's a good answer. He hates vamps.
Yeah,
but is a vamp.
Blade or Barlow from Salem's Lot is good too.
I'm gonna say Smilin' Jack from Bloodlines.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Mythology.
Yeah. Naveen writes, Resident Evil 4 Free Space. What are your thoughts on the Separate Ways DLC?
I haven't played it yet. Cole.
It's good. It's impressive. Gets way too hard towards the end.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. I've been meaning to play it. I have not done it yet.
Yes.
Michelle says, I've been quite taken with the Dan game as popularized on Quackstack. I just finished Chained Echoes, and besides fixing literally every problem I have with JRPGs by kind of not being a JRPG, I was also thrilled to find out it holds the distinction of having exactly zero entries on Rule 34. My question is this, what series, games, etc. do you like the most that you think have the least Rule 34 entries?
Outside of the Dan game, I don't think a lot about Rule 34 stuff.
I don't either. I hope that there's not tons of Deus Ex.
Yeah.
On there, you know, I love that. Oh, Monster Train.
Oh yeah.
What psychopath is doing like the sentient versus the sentient little fade fan fiction?
Yeah.
On your drawings.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
That would be wild. Monster Train probably is a real good one. I was going to say Wild Arms because nobody's thought of Wild Arms, but then it has the anime style, so it'd be very easy to do that. So, let's just say that. And our topic today comes from Matthew, who says, what makes us attracted to games or media that makes us feel bad? And by bad, I mean anxiety and the fear of a horror game, the sadness of a depressing movie, etc. Perhaps easier to discuss, what makes you seek out these kinds of experiences?
Yeah, so feel bad media, like what you're having when you're not having fun.
Yeah.
But you're still enjoying yourself or enriching yourself. In media.
Yeah. This for horror stuff, it's rough because my primary enjoyment of those, it is fun, is to see the cool new tricks that they do. Like, I find that fun, you know?
Yeah.
And when I do watch something that is genuinely scary, I am not saying this to be like a, you know, above it all kind of like, haha, this is how tough I am. It's just through constant exposure. It is very rare that watching a horror movie or playing a horror game will actually scare me, is the thing. So it's not a negative experience for me.
Yeah. I get scared of stuff, but it's fun also to be a little scared because you get that tension and relief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know on some level I'm not in any danger, you know, so that feeling of danger is kind of fun. Generally, my experience to horror things is also fun and laughing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I talked about going to this haunted house recently, a couple of the actors made fun of my laugh, which felt bad. I didn't know they were allowed to do that. I feel like they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
At that price, like, they can emotionally destroy
they can,
you.
They can roast me at that price. But you know, something would happen. I'd go like, you know, I'd make those laughs.
Oh, you would do the dumb henchman laugh?
I do kind of like, you know, I do this kind of dumb henchman laugh. And two of the people on non-consecutive haunts followed me around doing that laugh. And
Gary, the CIA could not get that out of me. why would you say that?
Oh, it's just, I don't know, it's just funny. Like it was funny to me. I know, you can't harm me, I got no pride. Something super spooky comes out that's real like dark, like you walk around a corner and there's a big bathtub full of blood and there's somebody sitting in it. I'm like, hey. how I react to it watching movies too. Like I'm just like, hey. That's the feeling I get.
You know, so here's the thing, when I was getting that root canal redone, I was also laughing like that.
Yeah, like there's a great in the Mr. Show reboot, the with Bob and David show that's on Netflix, that was a 4-episode series that they took one of the episodes off, so it's ludicrous. Opening sketch is Paul F. Tompkins getting bad news from a doctor.
Okay.
And the doctor is walking up to him and the first line of him is going, what? which I think is like perfect. Like, yeah. I thought that many times when a doctor looks at me with a real stern, you know, you're in trouble face, like, what? You know, it's very well observed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that like with that kind of thing, you know, if it's scaring you, you know, if you're not just, you know, giggling, henchman laughing, then it's just the tension and release that's fun.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
the
it's
thing.
The same. It's like roller coasters, right? Like you're not in danger, but it tricks your body into thinking you are for a second. You get that little adrenaline spike and that little jolt up your spine, but in a controlled way.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, you know, when I talk about good horror being in line with good comedy, it is that tension and release, you know, kind of feels.
Yes.
I feel like it plays like, in, you know, it has to be like hormonally in like a similar kind of, you know, kind of spot, you know, especially when that kind of tension can be, can be played with. The other thing, you know, and I've thought about this specifically having gone back and rewatched all the Saw movies, that I greatly enjoy for a lot of reasons. But also, like, you know, something that I, you know, I will say that, like, the torture porn genre is something I fell into pretty hard, not just because of the death traps and the pageantry of it and what have you, but just because, like, I don't know, mirror neuron firing can sometimes be really satisfying, you know? And it's just like, hey, like, I just kind of want to go in and have like a sensation by proxy almost, right? Even if it is entirely, you know, fake, even if it is entirely like, you know, designed to be manipulative, right? You're supposed to wince at this. Like, there's something to be said for kind of going on the ride.
Yeah. It's experiencing a bit of humanity you don't usually get to experience, you know, and this applies to grander things other than horror. This is also depressing media, you know, sadness, depressing movie, anxious media, you know, watching Uncut Gems is basically a 2-hour heart attack that you get to have, but it is a part. It's there's humanity in it. You know, this is something that pops up all the time on Best Quality Vacuum, right?
Yes.
I know many people who cannot watch Breaking Bad because it's bleak and intense and it's dour. It's not ultimately a very optimistic show about people. Like there are spots of true heroism in it, but it's a less optimistic show than like something like Chernobyl.
Yes.
You know, and that real people died in that. That wasn't fake. Mm-hmm. So it's not an optimistic show, but you're seeing humanity. Like there is in the self-rationalization that the villains in that show do, there is humanness. That is something that people do. And it's novelistic. It's like the same thing, the reason why you read like literature or any kind of art, to see aspects of humanity elucidated. You know, and that's why, you know, I've been using it as shorthand like for the last like year or so. But when something fails to connect with me, sometimes I feel like there's not humanity in it.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't do a good job of selling that bit. Like maybe it's bleak, you know, but I'm not seeing the humanity in it. And that's the difference between something that is purely, you know, because otherwise you could just watch Faces of Death.
Yeah.
You know, like you could just watch the things happening without a vacuum. The art in Feel Bad Media is in exposing that humanity in addition to all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or can be. It's not always like that's not what it is in the Saw movies. The Saw movies are more Cenobite hours.
Yes.
Like perverse death trap shit, which is great. Like that's super fun. You know, you like the craft and you like just thinking about like, oh man, that's a fucked up thing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, there's metal skateboarder appeal.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. It's not that there are only, it's not that there are only, you know, only like a certain kinds of stories that can be told in the extremes like that, but there are just like, there's a lot that is heightened by that valence, you know, getting out there. Like you could just have like a movie about a divorce, but like possession is doing something entirely different with it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing people at wit's end, you're seeing them make decisions in completely otherworldly situations. Like it is not a movie that feels good. It's watching the subway freak out in that, you know, is one of the most bleak things you can actually see. And it takes you on a fucking ride. But you're there for that valence, because it is, you know, trying to be larger than life. Right.
Yeah. And it's not that you can't get that same kind of thing out of like Kramer versus Kramer.
Right. Right.
You know, that is a more traditional story about a divorce. You know, I haven't seen that movie since I was a little kid, so I don't remember it at all.
Right.
But yeah, it was just the first divorce movie that could pop into my head.
Yeah.
If only there's some kind of story about a divorce, like a movie that is a story divorce, then I could have thought of that beforehand. Something would have driven me to that. you know, but I don't know it from Adam. The
I can't see what you're driving at.
Yeah, I just like Kramer versus Kramer, there's still humanity in that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as a thing, but it's just you can also ratchet up the parts that feel bad and make them feel bad in different ways to heighten that feel bad. So like you can watch something about just people falling out of love, like a contemporary lit fic. Kind of thing. And then you can add these elements to it, these, you know, ultra bleaknesses or ultra horrific or ultra surrealness as a force multiplier to that, you know, as a pinch of phosphate in your soda, you know, to just make it hit harder. You know, it's like if you watch YouTube cooking shows and they add powdered espresso to their chocolate things. And it's like, this just makes it taste more like chocolate. I know it's weird. It doesn't make it taste like coffee. Just makes it taste more like chocolate. You know, it's salt. It's seasoning.
Yeah.
You know, like as a thing.
Taking it back to games, you know, games that are stressful. You know, either in their subject matter or in their, you know, mechanics, preferably, you know, in both, I think, you know, getting down to, you know, Resident Evil 1 or, you know, Pathologic, I think is the platonic ideal of the form. You know, it gets you into, you know, situations where you are making, very suboptimal decisions, you know, to maximize resources, that are draining, you know, you know, out of your hands, you know, like water that you're trying to hold in your bare hands, you know, kind of deal. I think that heightens everything as well, and makes everything feel a little bit more kind of like close up, broadens the edges, defines them better.
Yeah, you would, yeah. You're doing things you wouldn't ordinarily do because you're forced to.
Yes.
You know, in that kind of scenario. In games as well, games that make you feel bad tend to be about things.
True.
Games that don't make you feel bad tend not to. Mm-hmm. You know, which is part of what, you know, it's been in the discourse lately and stuff, and we did Dredge this month. That's part of the cozy games thing. Like, you know, if you're going to make Animal Town Turtles, the game about turtles who live in Animal Town, it's not, yes, it's not going to make you feel bad at any point, but for me, it's not going to make me feel anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to find any humanity in that, because the basic idea is, wouldn't it be nice if everything was nice?
Yes.
Compared to something like Cart Life or Papers, Please, which are stressful and unpleasant in a lot of ways and depressing, mm-hmm. but they're about something, you know, they reflect on the real world. You know, they reflect on real world and humans in it.
Yeah.
You know, something like Devotion is a harrowing experience.
Yes.
But it touches my heart because they feel like real people in a way that, you know, a lot of games that are less feel bad can't accomplish.
Yeah.
I don't need a video game to tell me that friendship is nice because I have friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously friendship's awesome. Don't need it. Don't, you know, I know that. I live that every day.
Yeah.
You know, if a game is a feel bad thing, in general, this is not true. It doesn't mean art, you know, art can accomplish many purposes, right?
Like, yes.
It can be there just to entertain. There's nothing wrong with that. So it's not like only movies that make you feel bad are capable of art. You know, I'm not trying to say anything like that. I'm saying that if I'm going to get something like revealed and deep about humanity, it's usually not from a super, it's not a fun, it's not John Wick that's doing that. Like, I'm watching John Wick for the thrills. That's a roller coaster. You know, I'm watching it for the anxiety and stuff. I'm not watching that for, you know, the same reason I watch Schenectady.
Yes.
You know, different things. One of them goes deeper than the other one.
Yeah.
And some people aren't interested in that. And that's okay. No. I'm not calling them out like that. Like, you just don't want to feel bad. Like, that's okay.
It's your time. For me, I get
hugely nutritive for me.
Yes.
Love to feel that. Love to have those parts of me touched that are not usually touched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing I really value.
Ultimately, you know, it comes down to sensation seeking in a lot of ways.
Yeah. The sensates being the most virtuous of all the factions in Sigil.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, sensates are great. Yeah. Like, you know, they got it figured out. Society of sensation, you know, you only get one ride on this. Do the stuff you can, feel the things you can, you know? Yeah. Let's get into game responses.
Let's do, starting with our one response about Amnesia. Luke writes, I'm not a survival horror fan, so I had never played an Amnesia game before starting up a certain clever gentleman's Twitch stream of The Bunker. Let's call it Pentwrench. I think they're referring to my streams. Seeing those first few largely unsuccessful shuttle runs for the opening hour was enough to convince me to get the game myself, and I played it through in a single sitting that afternoon, now ready to attend the next day's stream as an armchair expert. The first survival horror game I ever enjoyed was The Suffering, because while it was scary, it gave you a shotgun, and with that, some agency. Mechanics and meaningful choices make the horror feel both more fair and more frightening, because it is something that you bring upon yourself, not merely the hostile whims of the game god. As an M-Sim simp, I also adore getting to hoover around the bunker, clearing rooms of their resources. The click of a room to clear the map, even more satisfying than shooting off a boomstick. If future Amnesia games maintain this direction, I will be a franchise fan for life.
Yeah, your lips, God's ears.
Please.
You know, I hope that I want more of this very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that we only got one response about it, more people need to play this fucking game.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a big update coming out. Like, now's the best time.
Yeah. Even the update is like a lot of masochism stuff.
Yes.
You know, it's the super hard mode. Doesn't matter. Time to get in.
Go.
Fucking do get it. In.
You do have it. No excuse.
3, 2, 1. Do it. Do it. play this game. Moving on to Dredge responses. David says, listening to the conversation during the Dredge episode and wondered if either of you ever played Sunless Seas and have any thoughts about the comparisons between the two and where in the middle a good game lies. If you haven't played Sunless Seas, it is similar lemonade stand. It is a similar lemonade stand kind of deal, but with a trade-based economy instead of fishing and maximum friction instead of none. You will die, starve, and go crazy multiple times before you manage to start squeezing enough money out of your runs to be self-sustaining. It was a bit too much for me in the same way Dredge was too little. I like Sunless Seas and Sunless Skies. Mm-hmm. Both those games I think are really cool. The difference for me is that they both have phenomenal prose.
Yes.
To them. So like every word in those games is worth reading as opposed to none of the words in Dredge being worth reading, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so even when I'm failing, you know, I would agree that has too much friction. My big thing in Sunless Seas is how slow you move.
Yeah.
Which I know sounds basic, but you just spend too much time slowly inching across a map. Mm-hmm. But the when you would read something, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So that was enough reward for me. I would think that there's probably something in between the two, but mm-hmm. it's Sunless Skies. It's Sunless Seas with faster movement speed.
Yeah.
Is the thing I want.
I don't have anything to add. You get my points.
No.
No. Gordon writes, I never thought I would write these words, but I really wish this game was more about the fish. There's so much fucked up shit in the sea. And after the first act of the game, we just seem to wireframe all of that as just what you do for income. Pulling a mutant fish is incredibly cool the first few times that I did it, but it rapidly becomes clear that all it means is slightly more money. You might as well just be pulling cash directly from the sea. Maybe I'm just hankering for a modern Legend of the River King, but it did feel like the Dredge was just puddle deep.
The if you haven't played Subnautica,
mm-hmm.
Subnautica is about the sea in a way that this game is not.
Yes.
And the hopeful notes of like the wonder of exploration and how beautiful it can be, like Subnautica eats this game's lunch. Like they're very different.
Yes.
But for fishness, mm-hmm. you I don't think you can really do better.
Same.
Than that.
Yeah.
Bimbly. Or sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off. I just was excited to say Bimbly.
No, I was just going to say Subnautica as an unqualified recommendation. Yeah,
Subnautica's great. Bimbly says, "Hi, Gary and Cole. I hope you're having the spookiest of spooky seasons. I played Dredge when it first came out and absolutely loved it. For me, it was the perfect game to come home after work and switch off while listening to some pretty music and catching funky fish. It may not be the deepest game ever, pun intended, but always got a thrill upon catching a new aberration, and the little jingle that played gave me a great hit of dopamine. I agree with everything you said about the game, but for what I wanted, it absolutely hit the nail on the head, and the simplicity made it perfect for me."
Yeah, can't argue with your experience.
Yeah, and wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's looking for different stuff, and finding the exact thing that you're looking for is great.
Yeah.
It's a blessing, and wouldn't take it from anybody.
Take the W.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andrew writes, "I was all ready to be a Dredge defender until I heard Gary say it was getting Game of the Year buzz. Why can't modern games media tell the difference between a nice time passer and Disco Elysium? Anyway, I'm very hit or miss when it comes to resource treadmills. I think the reason this one worked for me is because it was pretty quick and I liked the general atmosphere and the creepy fish variants. It probably also helped that early on while fishing with my stress meter up, I was hit by something I couldn't see because my eye was focused on the fishing minigame. That little mechanics-based spook gave a nice little boost of flavor for me that let me get past the repetitive quests, underused dog, and tech tree so lopsided I just stopped applying research parts once I got down to crab pots and trawling nuts. It's not Game of the Year, but it was a quick little spooky-flavored boat trip I enjoyed well enough for the start of October."
Whereas I have been cruising the underused dog tag on Steam, and as a connoisseur of underused dog games, it is a trifle, right? Mm-hmm. Like it is something that like we did put on a full set of armor to charge against something that is, you know, a paper tiger.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, but like, again, also though, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, so I am sympathetic to people who had a different experience with this as just being pleasantly surprised as a time waster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, weirdly enough, if this had a different control scheme, I think this would work real well on iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, because it has that kind of rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it would still be the same game, but I think it would probably go down a little easier.
Yeah. And problem of expectation, you know, I think more so than anything for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Classic says, thanks for your insight on Cozy/Horror/Kozor. I did feel a little bummed that you described Dredge as wanting for ambition. You do spend some Gary Nichols praising the craft and discussing how the team made conscious, if fishy, decisions to restrain the scope of the project, but I felt the discussion elided how ambitious design and actually releasing a game are always in tension. Maybe I just wish people more consciously appreciated the discipline scope as part of the craft. Regardless, I feel like you're onto something with regards to what coziness is, and I appreciate your echoing my feelings that chasing after comfort is steadily fraying what makes art stick with people rather than being passed as pablum. Finally, I know you know this, Gary, but strictly speaking, those nickels are a finite resource. As someone, at some point, the mint is going to grind to a halt, a sickly, smoky, ruinous halt. Spent the entire episode waiting for you to get to the Gary's Mortal Dread Factory after you set that up. Mm-hmm. At least one sicko in your audience isn't sick of it yet.
For people who didn't listen to that episode, that is going to be baffling.
Oh, yeah, that makes no sense.
Even I forget kind of what the Gary Nichols thing was.
It was just that if you want money in that game, you just go fish. And you're not spending a resource to get it. Mm-hmm. So anything bad that happens, you just go fish for a day.
Gotcha.
And it's like minting unlimited Gary Nichols. Like, I can just always turn time into resources in that game. It's just a treadmill.
Yes.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
As far as lack of ambition, like scope creep, you know, avoiding scope creep is an important part of any project. I think that it was not like a quantitative thing where like, oh, any lack of ambition is worth dinging it for. The decisions that they made in order to keep things scoped in actually kind of made it too simple. My taste personally, right? So like that's why I didn't bristle at like lack of ambition. It was more just like, oh, this could have had just a little bit more like complexity to it, a little bit more simulation, and it would have been more satisfying, you know.
Well, and also like it is hard. That is a thing that's in tension with releasing a game. Mm-hmm. You know, like releasing a game is hard, and I think that our show would be a more boring show if we verbally acknowledged that for every game.
Mm-hmm.
We did, like, as opposed to assuming, and I'm not trying to put words in the question asker's mouth or anything, mm-hmm. just thinking out loud with this. If we verbally acknowledge that every time, rather than just assuming our listeners know, mm-hmm. that like it is hard for an indie game developer to put out a game.
Yes.
Like, it's not that the effort of actually getting that out versus what they want to do. I understand compromises are made all the time with mm-hmm. that. With Dredge, I think what we were trying to say is that the balance wasn't right.
Yeah.
Like in a vacuum, it is good to make compromises to release your game. That is how all games get released.
Yes.
At the same time, I don't like, we didn't like the choices they made to compromise
mm-hmm.
that. And not saying that it should have not been released, but I would have accepted it taking longer to come out if it were a better game.
Yeah.
You know, I understand there are economic pressures of this, but you can't consider every single angle of a thing. You know, every single time you talk about it, we can't talk about, you know, the intersection of capitalism and art in detail every single time we talk about a game. You know, we've chosen a lane, I guess.
It's also a different version of the problem of, do we end every statement of opinion with "to me"?
Yes.
You know, like it just kind of needs to be understood that we're talking about our own opinion or thoughts about this. We're not making an attempt to be objective. You know, when we draw a judgment, that's impossible, not worth doing. Yes. Right. There are people who get angry when we do hedge, and there are people who, you know, if we forget it even once, they say we're pompous. Right.
Yep. Yeah. There's no really way to win. I would love to just have an assumed understanding. Like we're saying, we think this is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say something is bad, we say something is good. We're saying we think it is good.
Yes.
We say it's good or it's bad. Largely as a, mm-hmm. a time-saving measure.
Yes.
And that's a little pro tip for everybody. That's true mm-hmm. of every single person in the world and everything they've ever said.
Yep.
So that's just true of human speech in general. So a little hack you can apply to people saying things.
Yes.
No. Let's move on to Signalis.
Let's do. That was Gary, so I'll get started here with Matt, who says, I don't typically play survival horror games. However, I have an unhealthy appreciation for anything that invokes the King in Yellow. Signalis, thus, is a rare title that upon finishing it on a Friday night and learning of its hidden ending, I immediately picked it up again on Saturday and absolutely doom-guide my way through again in about 5 hours. Signalis also did one of the coolest things a piece of media can do, which is it inspired me to create. 40 hours of my free time later, I made a Signalis tabletop RPG. What an incredible game by such a small team.
The game would lend itself really well to a TTRPG with the character classes mm-hmm. for the different kinds of robots.
Yeah.
You know?
It has a pretty fleshed out world with a lot of unanswered questions about what things are like in other planets or in the Imperial Core. That owns. I'm happy that it inspired you to do that.
That's a super cool idea, for sure. Naveen says, I absolutely loved Signalis when I played it, which surprised me quite a bit. I have no affection for the PS1 Resident Evils due to their clunky controls and aesthetics that never interested me. However, I found myself charmed by the presentation of Signalis and how good the low-poly aesthetic looks in HD. There's a crispness here that is really appealing to me, and the overlaying of effects during the radio-tuning segments added some delightful chaos to the otherwise clean visuals. I also adored the puzzles, which felt both intuitive and grounded in the world, with the radio triangulation puzzle being a special high point. I can't say I love the story, although I know that in LGBTQ+ gaming spaces, it has taken on a special resonance. So maybe it just wasn't for me. Still, it was a wonderful overall package, and I now look forward to more retro PS1 aesthetics in games.
Yeah, you're living in a very good time for that, because that is still the ongoing movement. Yeah.
It's a hard thing if a story doesn't work for you and it features, you know, a sapphic romance or mm-hmm. what have you. Because you never want to take anything away from people, you know, who see themselves in it or what have you. Like, I felt the romance in this was undersold mm-hmm. personally, you know. It had nothing to do with it being a lesbian romance. It just had to do with me not connecting to the characters.
Yeah.
But I understand it. Worked for tons of people. I just don't want to take that away from anybody.
Yeah. It worked for me as a straight guy. Like, it's just,
it can work for some straights. Can have a little bit of sapphic romance as a treat.
I don't think there's anybody out there saying that if you don't identify with the precise configuration, you are not allowed to appreciate.
Yeah, no, I know. It'd be very funny if there were, though. And you know what? There's definitely somebody saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Not in our comments, but somebody right now is typing that into a text box, undoubtedly.
Oh, I just think it's neat. Yeah. Oh, man. Brian writes, hey gang, I was beyond excited when I heard you would be giving Signalis the WAF treatment. I found it during a transitory time in my life, and I cannot overstate the impact of the 9 hours that I spent with it during my initial playthrough. From the very first moments Elster set foot on the Penrose, I knew that I was in for something special. I expected blood, gore, and terror, and I was not wanting. What I didn't expect was an elegantly articulated descent into surreal madness, representation executed with beautiful nonchalance, and a surprisingly touching love story at the root of it all. Signalis is a stunning accomplishment for such a small team and achieves something truly unique in the format, being a love letter with its own identity. I can't wait to see what Rose Engine gets up to next.
Yeah, I'd be real curious. Do you know if they've announced anything?
No.
Do we know what they're doing?
This came out relatively short time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a long development, so I can imagine them taking a break.
Yeah.
You know, but it's been a big hit, so hopefully they have a blank check to move on to do something else, for sure.
Agreed.
Ivan says, played Signalis this spring. I really enjoyed the puzzle aspect of the game and exploring the creepy world. The phrase, oh no, are we in a realm, never left my head. When I was playing this game, it never felt too scary, which made it possible for me to complete. The real horror came a month after I completed the game. I was staying in a hotel, and they gave me a room for the night right next to the elevator. At night, when the elevator was making some industrial sounds, it was hard to shake the feeling that a corrupted Euler would come in. After watching a couple of reviews, I downloaded an extended inventory mod that had 2 extra slots. Made my experience much more enjoyable. Do you know other games that can benefit from small fixes like that? I also want there to be two more inventory slots. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I wish I had played it on PC so I could have thrown that in there.
Yeah.
It's rare things that just have one little fix like that.
Yeah.
I can't think of another game that just has one thing that would do that.
Usually, if I'm modding, it's going to be a pretty big, inventory overhaul or something like that.
Yeah, big mod or like 1,000 little fixes.
Yes.
Like the Bloodlines fix that just fixes a million little quest chains that can break.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rare, it's rare for me to think of a game that just has one thing like that.
Yeah.
That bugs me. The closest thing, just because it's recency bias, because we talked about this episode, like I would play a Metal Gear game that, shorten the cooldowns for alerts by half. That would help it a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I don't have one, but good. I'm glad you're able to tailor it. Like that is a feature to games, not a bug. Mm-hmm. Being able to customize it to what you will like is always a good thing.
Yes. Agreed. And finally here, Jordan writes, as an avid fan of Lovecraft, David Lynch, Kubrick, sci-fi, dreamy-weamy, timey-limey, timey-wimey, loopy-woopy logic, when I read the Steam page description of Signalis, it was love at first sight. Also deals with one of my favorite horror tropes of a person being transposed into a location, genius loci stuff. Upon play, my opinion became a bit more measured, but I can still say with certainty that Signalis is one of those games where it is more than the sum of its parts. The actual minute-to-minute gameplay isn't always satisfying. I found myself spending a not insignificant amount of time traipsing back and forth to the safe rooms to drop off and collect supplies in order to have enough room to pick up the various puzzle pieces. I think even one or two more slots would have gone a long way. Though I will say I found the game surprisingly well-balanced in terms of total supplies given in each area. I was always just on the side of feeling hungry for ammo, but never so desperate that things felt unwinnable. But what Signalis lacked for me in gameplay, it more than made up for in atmosphere, story, and music. Long after I beat the game, I found myself going back to the soundtrack and pondering the meaning behind everything. Special mention, by the way, to Die Totenzelle, Emptiness, Dousing, The Red Gate, and Become Whole Again, as far as music goes. Excellent tracks. Overall, a fascinating story. I particularly loved the first-person sequences exploring Ariane's past. I haven't quite come down on how much of the cosmic horror elements were really happening versus what was being conjured simply because of Ariane's interest in the memories of the King in Yellow book being projected into the dream via the bioresonance, i.e., what all was being created versus what was being tapped into. Though if you can't tell the difference, does the distinction really matter?
A great sentence.
Yeah.
Of just being incredibly confusing. what was really happening versus what was being conjured simply because of Ariana's interest in and memories of the King in Yellow book being projected into the dream via the bioresonance, i.e., is very funny.
Yes. Like, video games are good, actually.
Like, and furthermore, that is to say, nevertheless.
Due to the nature of the cosmic things in play, there is no reason to believe that things are not physically being made, that you are not physically going and doing stuff.
Well, there's bioresonance as well. There's magic.
Yes.
In the game. So it doesn't, it all is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for writing in. We appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
If
you have thoughts about October's games, it's too late. We just read those. If you have thoughts about November's games, the deadline is November the 15th at duckfeed.tv/contact to write in about Sayonara Wild Hearts, Grand Theft Auto 5, which we are doing a two-part episode about, and our premium episode for that month, The Order 1886.
Yes. And time to announce December's games.
Yeah.
December's games are, we changed this. So as people probably guessed, we were originally going to do Baldur's Gate 3 and then decided to do a show on it instead. Mm-hmm. So we needed something a bit shorter and we wanted something that would contrast.
Yes.
With Baldur's Gate 3. So we're doing Mass Effect.
Yeah. Mass Effect 1.
N7. That means something in that world.
That's right? I think it's the name of an arms company.
Yeah. I know people with that tattoo.
Yes. Yeah.
Of the arms company from the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mass Effect 1, relatively recently put out in the remastered kind of thing, just mm-hmm. because of ease of acquisition. That's going to be the version that we're playing. At least I am. Yeah, I already have a copy of it. It's fine. But I have enough memories. I've played it several times in the basic version, so we can all complain about the Mako. Why not?
Can't wait. looking forward to having an excuse to go through it, for sure. And again, contrast really nicely.
Yes.
It's sci-fi. It's an action RPG. You mm-hmm. know, it's a lot of things like that. And then the new transition of WRPG month, not taking up the entire month. Our premium episode for that month is Slayers X Terminal Aftermath, Vengeance of the Slayers.
Hell yeah.
The spinoff game from the extended Hypno Space universe.
I don't know, friend of the show, but Zane? Somebody we admire. Yes, by Zane. Yes. By Zane Rocks. Come on now. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Associated with yes. Jay Tholen. Noted excellent person, Jay Tholen.
Yeah. We like Jay. Your friend of the show is overstating it, but we like yes, Jay and have interacted like with Jay. Jay on Twitter a few times.
Yes.
I've got my Gumshoe Gooper plush staring at me right now.
Yes.
So, you know, hit quietly one of, I wonder if we did Hypnospace in that 2020 year as well. I would not be surprised.
It feels like we did do Hypnospace in 2020.
Jesus Christ.
Terrible year for humanity. Actually.
Yeah.
Incredible
year for WoF. Yeah. Hypnospace, low key, one of my favorite things we've ever done on the show.
Oh, it's
I think
a revelation.
It is the best detective game.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's actually probably a better detective game than Obra Dinn. Mm-hmm. I love Obra Dinn, but it is, more creative and has more heart.
Hypnospace Outlaw was May of 2020. Yeah.
Jesus, goddamn Christ. Like, 2020.
Why did we even bother?
Year. Yeah, why didn't that would have, we could have walked backwards away from God that year and just retired on the best possible year for games that you were done. Man. Vengeance.
Vengeance.
Yes. Yeah, that is a really interesting boomer shooter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go quite as far with this as I thought it did, but the interesting thing is, since it's made by a fictional person, mm-hmm. There is like characterization that comes through mm-hmm. in it, and it's also incredibly funny.
Yeah.
That's gonna be the premium episode. Everybody gets Mass Effect, patrons get Slayers X Terminal Aftermath, Vengeance of the Slayers.
Yes.
You'll learn what a Slayer is. Thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate you. If you are not demographically identical to us, please send me an email, gary@duckfeed.tv, with a project you'd like us to promote. We'd be happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to support us, head on over to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You'll get exclusive content. You'll get this month's bonus episode and all the other bonus episodes. We think it is good value.
We do. We recently added the ability to get that bonus content through Spotify, if you so choose. That integration is there. If the ease of use has been an issue for you, that is open for you. If you cannot support us, we understand. What is free is leaving a rating or review on your podcast directory of choice. That is that is greatly appreciated if you can.
Yes, very much so. And big thanks to Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen. Our producer.
Thank you, Gwen.
Oh.
Yeah. That's going to be it. We will see you next week with Sayonara Wild Hearts.